Hello and welcome to the Connected Membership Special for 2019. If you are really a FM member of any show, thank you for your support. We are here to discuss calling it a film is a stretch, perhaps.
Why is it a stretch?
Well, maybe it's not grand enough of a word, or maybe it's too grand of a word. We'll find out what we think.
It's incredible. I mean, it had multiple A-list celebrities and Danny Boyle as director. Like, it's a serious movie. Nominated for 2 Oscars.
All right, Mr. Wikipedia. We're talking about the...
$30 million budget.
I did not know this.
Did it win any of those Oscars?
Let me double check that. No.
Oscar nominations are like saying, well, I meant to clean the house today.
It won 2 Golden Globes.
Okay.
That's something.
The 2015 okay. R-rated
film critic awards.
R-rated Steve Jobs. I rented it.
I guess for language, right?
R-rated. I mean, there was that scene where he killed everybody with a hammer, but other than that, it was pretty.
What does the R stand for?
Really?
Real adults?
Real adults only. Yeah. Randy, I don't know.
So yeah, this is the Aaron Sorkin movie. This came out. There was a string of Steve Jobs movies. This was I think it's the most recent one. And it is...
Yeah, this was the last one to come out, but it was the real
yes,
one.
Yes, Walter Isaacson, like, blessed, worked with it. Of course, Aaron Sorkin wrote it. It makes it a big deal. It feels very much like an Aaron Sorkin piece. Like, all the dialogue is very fast.
But also, directed by Danny Boyle makes it another big deal.
Sure, and it's got some big stars. It's got Seth Rogen and Kate Winslet and the superstar.
Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels.
And the superstar Michael Fassbender.
The reason we are reviewing this movie is because of the long-running joke when this must have begun in sometime in 2015, this joke, when Fassbender was announced as playing Steve Jobs, Federico refused to believe that he existed.
I know now that Michael Fassbender is an actor.
Oh, my God.
Or at least tries to do so. Mm-hmm. But I keep thinking what I thought years ago. I've seen a few movies with Fassbender at this point. He's a good actor.
What?
He just has a... Hold on. He's a decent actor, okay? He just has a forgettable face. Like...
But you know what I think it is? And I'm not trying to be like, oh, he's like the best actor of all time. But like, he is one of those people that when he plays a role, he really plays it to the point that you kind of forget who he is as a person because he's pretty good at the people he plays. That's how I see it anyway.
That illusion doesn't really hold with this movie because he looks nothing like Steve Jobs, which is one of my main...
I think we're all too close to the source material in that one, right? Like, about the look. Because I think he does a pretty good job with both mannerisms and voice.
No.
There are some of the mannerisms strongly. Are very good. Like when he's showing off the iMac and he's pulling up the sleeves on his shirt, like it looks pretty good. And the voice is not incredible, but I think he does a good job considering he's not even American.
I disagree very much. I think Ashton did a better job.
Oh, Ashton did a way better job.
Because he looks like Jobs. It was creepy.
No, I'm not saying he did a better job as an actor. Just as the voice, purely the voice.
No,
we're
just
talking about
the
here.
Mannerism and the voice, and like and the inflection of the like the way that Steve pronounced the letter S, for example. All those tiny details.
At the time, there was all those interviews, right, where like Ashton was saying how he was like just listening to hours and hours of Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
But I think Fassbender does a passable job considering the fact that he is Scottish. I think so. Like, you know, he has some hurdles to go over there.
Yeah, but again, I was saying, I just think he has a forgettable face. Like, I can close my eyes and picture Tom Cruise's face, or I don't know, what's his name, Matthew McConaughey's face. Like, I can picture those faces immediately, but Michael Fassbender's face just doesn't stick. I don't know what it is. It just he has a forgettable appearance.
Why don't we call him like Michael Face Blender or something like that?
Yes, yes.
There you go. I need to make a statement before we continue.
Okay.
I loved this movie.
I also need to make a statement. I didn't hate the movie, surprisingly, but I think, and this we're going to discuss this, I think the technique of the film was better than the movie itself. Like, it was a, like, technically speaking, not a perfect. It's got some flaws, the technique of the movie, like the storytelling technique. I appreciate that more than the movie itself.
I think that was one of the things that I did love about it, like the way that they decided to tell the stories and the stories they told and how they told them. But like, I was gripped by it. I thought it was fantastic. I will definitely watch this movie again. I really, really enjoyed it.
Okay. All right. Steven, any opening statements?
I think the way the movie was structured, so to get into the details for a second, then I'll come back to my opening statement. Everything in this movie takes place backstage before a big event. So you have the original Macintosh in 1984, you have the iMac in 1998, and then you have Next in the middle, like 88 or so. And while I appreciate that structure, and I think it would have been cool, but not, and I liked the movie. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. You know, I'd watch it again. But the movie, in my mind, there's a single line that it shoots itself in the foot in a massive way. And it's during the iMac launch, and Fassbender sort of mutters under his breath. It's like everyone, hang on, I wrote it down. I wrote it down on my phone. 5 minutes before a launch, it's like everyone gets drunk and tells me what they all really think. It's like...
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, that's also my main problem. Like, in this movie, this guy, all these family tragedies, they happen to take place before a keynote. Like, by the third time it happens, you're like, I mean, come on, again? Seriously?
Well, I mean, there is something to think about in the fact that this isn't all the keynotes. Like, it doesn't happen to him every time. It just happened to him on these three occasions over a 10-year difference.
On the most important three ones other than the iPhone.
So on that, in that regard, right, with that, I can imagine the Jobs stuff happening. So the Woz stuff happening, the Scully stuff happening. But all of the, like, interpersonal relationships with Lisa and Chris-Ann. Those are the ones that are like the hardest to wrap your head around as to why they're happening now. But the idea that like he doesn't see Woz very much anymore except at these things, like I can get that, right? But like I understand what you mean. Like that is kind of funny. It's like why do all of his family dramas just happen at these times?
I think they just it just tries to do too much in a lot of those scenes where it's a the movie's trying to say this is an important product. That's why it's important. They're trying to give some like tech background, which I have some notes on. Family background, interpersonal stuff. It's like the premise is clever, but I think it's, and Aaron Sorkin does this. He packs things densely, but I think it's a little too dense in places. It's like I can keep up with it. It's not that, but it's that this is all sort of overwhelming going back around.
Well, yeah, it is trying to work in service to the idea, right? Because it's like you've got to be able to weave a story, and they decided they wanted to do it based around these keynotes with very few flashbacks and stuff. So at a certain point, you kind of just have to let it be that way, right? Like it's like, well, this is just what they ended up with because of the narrative device they decided to go with, which as we all appreciate, right? The way that they did that, right? Like basing it around the keynotes and stuff, like is technically quite clever. But yeah, you are going to end up with some mess, which is the idea of this long line of people waiting outside of Steve Jobs' door to be all brought in to air their grievances. It's reminded me of The Godfather, right? Like on the day of the daughter's wedding, everyone comes to see The Godfather. It's just like that. That's why it's all like this.
So Stephen, let me ask you. Joanna Hoffman really existed?
Yes.
Like, okay.
She is spoken about in the Isaacson book quite a lot, right?
Yes, she was.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I read the book years ago.
I read it when it came out. I haven't looked at it since. She was very close to Jobs, and I think that their relationship on screen is at least pretty accurate from what I've read. There's a link in the show notes where Kate Winslet talks about like actually interviewing, like spending time with her to try to understand their relationship and who she was, and the movie, like the people who made the movie took all of that really seriously. It's not to say there aren't fabricated things or aren't things that are played up, but each of the characters is a real person based on who that person is or was. And I do appreciate that about it, that yes, it dramatizes things, but it's not like they introduce, you know, new characters to the story.
Okay. Okay. So she used to work at Apple and she left at some point in the 90s.
Yeah, and she went with him to Next and then came back again. She was one of the very small group of people that he took with him and then brought back again.
Uh-huh. Nice. Okay.
Yeah, she left Apple in the mid-90s. Well, she retired in the mid-90s. So she worked at Apple.
Okay.
And then went to Next. And actually, she did not come back to Apple. She went from Next to General Magic, which is another tech company with Bill Axon, Andy Hertzfeld, some other people that failed. And she retired in that and, you know, has had two kids and sort of stepped out.
So she wasn't there with the AMA.
From what I read, I don't think so. But I can't say for sure. But I don't think so.
Okay.
But let's talk about some historical accuracy. Can we do that?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
So
please, yes. That was my first question.
I think starting at the story of 84, the Apple II and Mac riff that Woz talks about, like, hey, you know, you really kind of burned down the Apple II team. They feel like they're being left behind. Well, I don't know if Wozniak confronted Jobs over that on the day of the keynote or not, but that was a very real rift within the company. And we talked about that in Pirates of Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Remember, like, there's the thing where they're all on the beach. Mm-hmm. That all happened.
The beach, yeah.
That beach is – that situation is referenced in this movie. And that was a real rift, and Jobs wanted it dead, and it basically paid the bills for Apple. And of course, the irony is the Apple II outlasted Jobs by a really long time. I mean, the Apple II went on through the mid 90s. And so that was all really real. And the thing that I think is more interesting, though, in the 84 story is the Mac can't complete the demo. And then Andy Hertzfeld says, well, we can do it with the 512. So you'll remember the first Mac had 128K of RAM. And then the Mac 512 came out, or the Fat Mac, and had 4 times the amount of memory. That demo that we've all seen on YouTube was indeed carried out with a prototype 512. And, you know, there's a line in the movie of like, do you think that's unethical? They're like, oh yeah, it's way past the line of being questionable. And I kind of agree. That's sort of a slippery move, because the 128K Mac couldn't really do reliably what that one did on stage. But yeah, that's a true story. They really did swap it out and run that demo with a 512, and no one knew, and it came out a good bit later. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, I expect stuff like that happens all the time still.
Still? You think so?
Like, I think here's the thinking, and I don't know what actually ended up happening with the 128. They believed that they could get it to work, so they would just keep working on it until the product was released.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I expect stuff like that happens all the time. Right, where like they're creating these very, like, when they're showing off software at WWDC, they must be creating this like perfectly clear path to get things done that if you deviated from, everything would die.
Like, they talked about that a couple years ago, some guys were like reliving their experience with the iPhone keynote, and they talked about that, how you have to do it in very certain steps. But that's different than this hardware can't actually do this, so we're going to like put in different hardware.
No, but could it? Did it end up doing it by the time it was released, though? Because the way that the movie pitches it is like, oh, it crashes like a sixth of the time.
I don't know.
Or 5/6 of the time. Yeah, that was kind of the way I took it, and I expect stuff like that happens a bunch even still today, that where it's just like, well, this can work. We believe we can get it to work, but it's only going to just work for now. Right, like we've just seen that, right? Like how many software features getting pushed to later on in the year because they don't work properly.
Right. Rest in peace, iOS 13. So then we move on to Next. We see the movie gets out of sequence. Like we see Steve Jobs leaving Apple in a very dramatic boardroom scene with cameras at angles and rain pouring down the windows, because that's how you know it's a dramatic night when it's raining. And So we get to Next, and they basically have hardware that's really expensive, way more than their customer said they wanted. They build the case that they don't really...
I like how they do the transitions between the where they have like all the news reports and stuff.
I thought that was good.
I think that's really cool. I like that.
Yeah, you kind of get caught up on the 10 years or 5 years within a couple of minutes. Yeah, I think that's nice. But the story at the next keynote is that they had the hardware, they had the cube, but their OS was severely lacking. And what would become Next Step was very basic at that point, but they had it, but it wasn't final. And so if I feel like from what I've read, this was maybe turned up a little bit for the drama. So you get in a situation where they're, you know, he it sounds like Steve Jobs knows that they're doomed, you know, backstage. He's like, oh yeah, tell me something I don't know. You know, like, you're going to fail. It's like, yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That seems a little dialed up to me, from what I've read. But the really interesting thing in this scene from the technology perspective is there is this Guy Kawasaki article, and I've got a link in the show notes about this.
Yeah. And that article was really published?
The article says, I'm predicting Steve Jobs would sell Next to Apple and return to the company in the future. And maybe that's why he is doing this. It seems like that article was written, but wasn't a super locked in prediction. Mm. So there's some links in the show notes. It seems like it's dialed up a little bit in the movies, but not necessarily like I don't read it as a hard and fast prediction that that's what's going to happen. And I surely don't think that this like gave Steve Jobs the idea to build software that Apple needed.
Well, I found I found it, and he wrote it as a press release, like a spoof press release.
Right.
So like it wasn't like a prediction as such. It was like a joke. Mm-hmm. Right. But which is the way that they spoke about it. It was funny to have Macworld. It's always funny to hear Macworld mm-hmm. mentioned. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they wrote it as like a press release that Apple, that Steve Jobs to return to Apple as CEO after Apple Buy Next.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. But it was in September 1994.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Dan Morin does those in like the Six Colors magazine, like sort of funny, jokey things. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what if one of those came true? So I don't think it was a serious prediction, but I think the movie treats it more seriously than it was treated in its day, I guess is kind of where I come down on it. But, you know, other than that, like the next stuff.
Well, yeah. Let me ask you. In that, one of the pivotal parts of that whole sequence, the middle sequence, is like Steve basically saying that the reason he created Next was for it to be bought by Apple mm-hmm. and go back. Is there literally any report to say that that was Steve's intention?
I don't think so.
Because me and Adina were talking about it, and her kind of take on it from watching the movie, which I do think is interesting, because it seems like there is some truth to that, and that basically Next was created always as revenge to Apple. Right, mm-hmm. Like that was why he created it in the first place. So even if he did end up at some point believing that this was the plan, it's still revenge to Apple, right? Like
right.
Just the idea was, oh, I will get my revenge. And then over time, first it was like, I'm going to beat them at their own game. Then he realized he couldn't do that. And so then maybe it became, I'm going to force them into a situation where they need me again.
Yeah, because I mean, when he left, he took a bunch of engineers with him, and there was actually a lawsuit and all sorts of stuff over it. So mm-hmm. clearly, the whole thing was a sort of a middle finger to Apple, but I don't think it goes as far as what the movie sets up as. It was all engineered to be the, you know, revenge on Apple, but also being the savior of Apple, right? Like that doesn't. I don't think that jives with what actually happened.
Yeah, but it sort of makes it sound like the movie makes it look like the entire Next OS was sort of like a scam mm-hmm. to a point where like,
yeah,
this doesn't really exist. It doesn't really work. I'm just here to, you know, get a buyout from Apple. And I don't think it necessarily pays justice to Next Step in that. I mean, there were a lot of innovations. I mean, the entire, was it Cocoa? Mm-hmm. The entire Cocoa framework was a Next thing.
Objective-C. I mean, it was massive.
I mean, And folks like A.V. Tavanian is in the movie, but also Scott Forstall were at Next. And so it's not like they had a fancy demo that, you know, and that was all that is. But it sort of makes it look like that, that Steve Jobs created this cube and the cube was running a demo and somehow he managed to convince Apple to buy Next.
But it's so much easier to tell the story this way than, to be like, well, what actually happened was Apple needed an operating system and they were working to try and buy BOS, but that didn't really work out for them. So instead they went, like, it's just like, that's not an exciting story to tell in a movie like this, right? There is something way more exciting about blending the fact and fiction with it.
Yeah, you know, and this is because everyone has to do it all 5 minutes before the stage time. You know, he has an interaction with Woz. And throughout this movie, Jobs is very, like, almost, like, paternal to Wozniak. Wozniak calls it demeaning, and I think, but I don't know how warm their relationship was after, you know, those early days. I mean, Wozniak still goes to keynotes and is still involved, but I don't know how close they were sort of in those interleaving years. My impression is, or has been, that they kept up, but sort of at a distance. So I don't know. But but we get all those flashbacks because Scully, played by Jeff Bridges, different actor.
You know, different, Jeff Bridges, but it's not him. It's the other Jeff. One.
The other Jeff shows up and, they, you know, try to bury the hatchet, but it goes sideways, and they finally do that after the keynote. Like, I don't know if Jobs and John Scully ever had words again after that meeting. Like, I can't imagine Jobs being willing to do that.
Was that true then? Or do you mean, when you say that meeting, do you mean the board meeting?
Like, I have always thought... Maybe it's wrong. Again, I can't find anything. I haven't read the Isaacson book in years. But my thought or my impression has always been that they never spoke after that.
Yeah, I like the way that they tell the story. Because, like, it's interesting to be like, oh, well, all the media believes I fired you. But you put me in a position where I had no choice. Mm-hmm. And it's just a better retelling of the history. Right, because even now, like, I still think of it as, oh, that was where they fired him. Well, they did fire him, but it was like a...
Do you really have no choice, though?
Well, if that's true, Stephen, you can tell me if that meeting is true. You can imagine it going the way that it did, right?
Yeah, I mean, Apple was in a really tough position because the Macintosh was not successful. Jobs wanted more and more resources poured into it. And Jobs did back himself into a corner with the board. And I think that he would have known that if this comes up, it's not going to go my way. And some of that's in that dialogue, right? Like, you know, it was stacked against me. He's like, well, yeah, you should have known what would have happened. You know, you did it to yourself. Jobs clearly was out of control and clearly someone who was not ready at that time in his career to be to hold the position he held. And so I think the board firing Jobs was clearly at the time probably the right thing to do, but no one could have predicted that would have played out as well as it did in the end either. Not that having John Scully in charge was the right decision, but clearly you can't have Jobs running things because he was a maniac. So I think
I like during that like fight that he was having with Scully, and they go into the different flashbacks. Like they do the image of him sitting in the living room with no furniture.
Oh yeah, you got to work that in, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. I like that. There's a few things like that they throw him in there. Like visually, the movie is very interesting. You know, they use a lot of like the title cards and stuff. Like when they go to the iMac, they use all the colors and the fonts and like you know, it's like it's fun. It seems like that there was care put into the visual of this movie in a bunch of different ways. You know, like I liked it.
There's some lines that really are sort of encapsulate Jobs, and and I wrote one of them down. At some point he says, whoever said the customer is always right was, I promise you, a customer.
So good.
And that was an excellent line.
Yeah. One of my favorites was from Woz, where he says computers are supposed to have human flaws. I'm not going to build this one with yours.
That's really good.
It's so good.
Aaron?
So yeah, Seth Rogen, surprisingly good.
Seth Rogen was fantastic in this movie.
Really, really good performance. And also, I mean, Kate Winslet was also amazing. I mean, and I just read that she won a Golden Globe for her performance as Joanna Hoffman. So totally deserved. We need to talk about the fact that I do not think Steve Jobs in the 80s was as muscular as Michael Fassbender is.
Oh, I said this. I was like, there's no way he had biceps like that.
Steve Jobs was not that ripped, I think. That is impossible.
Why did he put his feet in the toilet?
That's a very upsetting scene.
Right? What was that?
What was that? What was that?
I don't understand.
Why did that happen?
That must have been a Steve Jobs anecdote.
Here we go.
That we do not remember.
Here we go.
Okay.
I am reading.
Come on.
He soaked his feet in water as a stress reliever, according to his authorized biography written by Walter Isaacson.
Really?
One of the tech guru's go-to stress relievers during the early days of Apple was to head to the company toilets and soak his bare feet in the toilet water. In fact, the guy had a little bit of a hygiene problem. Isaacson also revealed how Jobs was put on the night shift while he worked at the game maker Atari because he rarely bathed and would walk around the office in his bare feet.
That I remember. No. Steven, did people really need special tools to open the Mac?
Yes, you did. It's not special in the sense like today where like all the screws are, you know, you have to have some...
iFixit set.
The big difference is it's a regular driver, but it's really long. So you have to have a really long handle tool. It's called the Mac Cracker. So I have one somewhere in here. Because the screws were underneath the handle. The Mac Cracker.
The Mac Cracker. That's Mac a new name cracker. For your website.
And so, yeah, it was a specialized tool to a degree. But you couldn't just like walk up to it with a screwdriver. Because the screws were so recessed into the plastic, you couldn't reach them. And I think the movie does a good job, talking about the hardware for a second, I think it does a good job like explaining the differences between Jobs and Wozniak and their respective designs. And, you know, Wozniak's like, you know, computers need slots. People want to tinker with them. We need to let people do what they want to with them. And, you know, Jobs is, the movie terms it end-to-end control, which is like a little heavy-handed. But he thought computers should be appliances. So the Macintosh had no slots. You couldn't open it. Interestingly, after Jobs left, the Macintosh 2 line had lots of slots. You know, he lost that argument for a while. But you look at Apple today, and Jobs clearly won the argument in the long term, right? Because my $5,000 iMac Pro here, there's not a RAM door on. You know, I can't do anything to it. It's all sealed in, which is how Jobs wanted things. So it's interesting that they bring that up into such detail because that's a pretty nerdy detail. But I think the movie does a really good job at explaining the differences, and because that really was like a fundamental argument in the company for a really long time.
I couldn't tell if it was a joke when he said that next computers could only email other next computers.
I think that was a joke.
I couldn't tell. It wasn't really played as one. It was very hard to tell for me. The crowds don't get that excited.
No.
Crowds got very excited at all those keynotes. I mean, crowds get excited. They're not that excited.
But people don't, like, applaud and chant before the guy comes out, right? Like, there's a scene where they're...
all, like, stamp their feet
on the ground.
Yeah,
where he and Kate Winslet are underground. Like, the lights above them are shaking. Like, the Germans are bombing the city. It's like, that's a little over the top.
Another question... was the journalist supposed to be representative of Walt Mossberg, but they couldn't get Mossberg, so it was Joel something? Or was he actually somebody who actually followed Jobs? That was one of my questions. Joel, he used to write for, what was that, Time magazine? I think it was the guy from Time doing a profile on Steve Jobs for all the three events from the movie.
I'm not sure if that guy was supposed to be from Time or not. Like there was the Time situation brought up earlier. I don't know if that was if that was it. Like I don't know if that's who. Like he was a Time reporter. I'm not sure.
CNET says that the journalist is a fictional character created for the movie.
So it's probably Mossberg.
They did a pretty good job of aging everybody as the movie went on, except the journalist.
Yeah, it looks the same.
I wished I could remember the exact quote, but I really liked where he was, What did he say? Like, oh, I'm pleased I don't work in your industry because it moves so fast.
Yeah.
And then Jobs was just like, well, yours isn't going to be around for very long.
Yeah, yours is getting ready to change big time.
I really like that a lot.
The foretelling of Apple News Plus, right?
What do we think of the overall performance from Fassbender throughout the movie?
I mean,
I think it was, as I said, I think it was honestly, like, for all the fun that I make of Fassbender, because it's just forgettable.
Michael Fassbender.
Yes, but I think, you know, like the scene with Scully, for example, that was really good. I think it was a really good performance, and I think it did a decent job at conveying our imaginary Steve Jobs mm-hmm. behavior, like the way that we think Steve Jobs behaved, mm-hmm. Based on what we know. But the physical appearance really creates a problem for me, in that I'm so close to the subject that I look at this guy and I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's playing Steve Jobs. It could be anybody, though. Like, that it's sort of like an uncanny valley situation. Like, you're saying things that Steve Jobs would say, but you don't really look like Steve Jobs. And it's always weird in this type of movie. Like,
I guess there's a difficulty in trying to cast one man who can play someone over such a period of time. Right.
Yeah. In fact, he looks the most like Jobs in the flashbacks to when they're young in the garage. That's the most convincing.
Yes.
Like Jobs look alike. And they did a good job with everybody else. Like, I'm looking through Google image search, like,
yep.
Hertzfeld, everyone else kind of looks the right way.
Because if you remember the rumors, they were supposed to cast Christian Bale, but he didn't sign up for the movie.
I'm not sure Bale would have looked any more like Jobs, to be honest.
Yeah.
Batman.
I mean,
although he probably would have got facial reconstructive surgery, because Christian Bale would do literally anything.
Exactly. He does crazy things.
So, you know, it might have worked out. I think he did. I think everybody did a good job in this movie. Like, I think all of the key performances are played very well. Like, I think that everyone did a good job. Like, as you would expect from a movie kind of this caliber. Like, I do wonder what they were trying. Like, what was the expectation of this movie? Like, what did they want it to mm-hmm. be? And I think they wanted it to be like a hugely successful biopic. Like, that's what this movie is supposed to be, I think, of like, this is the definitive movie about this individual. I don't think they did it, but I think that's what they were going mm-hmm. for, you know. But like, I just don't think that as much as people think about him and feel about him, and as much as everybody knows him, I just think that the world is not as interested in the man's life as was hoped.
Yeah.
Right. This is not a movie for people that aren't really like us.
People who aren't so familiar with it. And I think from that perspective, like the I think if you don't know anything about him, you'll understand this is probably a dramatic portrayal. And I think you kind of get the gist of it. I do think the movie basically leaves a bad taste in your mouth about who Steve Jobs was. Like,
do you think, so? Because I kind of came away with it being like, they have shown me what I feel like I already knew about him, which is he is incredibly inspiring in the way that he thinks about things, but is a bad person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that's how I came away from it. And it's like, well, that's what I already kind of knew, that like...
Yeah, and it's not a good feeling, though.
That he is a fundamentally flawed person. But I came to terms with that a long time ago.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is I agree with you, but I think if you're new to his story and you don't realize any of that, like you don't know about his like terrible way he treated his daughter and all that stuff, you're like, ooh, this guy wasn't like an upstanding human being all the time. I think...
And I still also, like, and I'm pretty sure that I said this at the time, I still think they maybe could have picked different product launches. The next one, really, it was like my least favorite part of the movie, except for the Scully mm-hmm. scene.
I think I would have liked to see the iPod. Yeah,
honestly.
I think you could have had an equally good movie doing the iMac, the iPod, and the phone. I know what they were going for by trying to tell the Lisa and Chris Anne story, but like, I don't really know if that's the story that most people want to see.
Yeah.
You know?
So the more we keep talking, the the least were liking.
No, still love the movie, but like I still,
sure?
I enjoyed it for the movie.
Because you say this, but then you say other things.
No, like I enjoyed it for what it was, but as an Apple nerd, I would have preferred something different. Yeah. But like I enjoyed the movie for what the movie was. Like I thought it was a good movie, but like it is not the best movie that could have been made about Steve Jobs' life. Mm-hmm. That's still Pirates of Silicon Valley, by the way.
I think it is, honestly.
It's still the best one.
I actually did enjoy the Ashton one.
I didn't see it.
It was fun, you know.
Mike, you definitely saw it. You and I spoke about it on a podcast at some point.
It was called Jobs. I think it was called Jobs.
I never saw it. You told me about it on a podcast. You went to see it and told me about it. I've never seen it.
Okay. Well, it's out there. 2013. I want to talk about the iMac thing, but I want to talk about some dates that I jotted down that were wrong. So moving things around to make them line up. So the Time magazine at the beginning, where the computer's named Person of the Year and not Steve Jobs, that happened actually 2 years before. It happened in 19. Well, it came out in January 83. So I guess a year earlier than the movie makes it seem like it's the current edition. It was really a year before. So pretty close, but off a little bit. The article we mentioned that Guy Kawasaki wrote actually came out in 1994, while it's like 5 or 6 years after the next launch. So that's, I think, the biggest time shift that happens, as far as like something in the real world and something in the movie not quite matching up. The Next Cube and the Next Step actually didn't ship until like a little over a year later. So it was very much like a preview event, not really a launch event, but that's sort of tricky. And the development of the iPod, as far as I understand, that was not under development in 1998 when the iMac was being announced. You know, it closes with Jobs saying the 1,000 songs in your pocket line to Lisa. That was not on the radar at that point, at least in any way that I found. So some small things, I'm not saying those are bad things. I understand why they did it, and it makes the story stronger, but a little bending of time in a few places, if you will.
Guy Kawasaki has 1.4 million followers on Twitter.
That's good.
So there's that. Still tweeting about marketing and career advice.
There you go. Did you guys find it strange that like who wasn't in the movie? So like there's no Johnny Ive, who was heavily involved in the iMac.
I thought that was weird that they didn't. It's because they did the iMac. I was weird that they didn't do that. I didn't have a minute. I found that part to be like particularly strange. I was waiting to start. I wonder who's going to play Johnny. Mm-hmm. Nobody.
I guess I didn't think about that. I think I've already forgotten about Johnny.
Oh, poor Johnny.
and Hertzfeld left Apple in like 84 or 85 maybe. And he like follows, like he's just there all the time. Like he's backstage at the iMac. Again, he may have been there, but.
Was he actually as involved with Lisa as the movie portrays? I'm expecting yes.
I believe so.
And if that's the case, that might be why like he just keeps popping up, because he's actually intertwined with Jobs' life in some way.
Is that the guy that runs folklore.org?
Yep, that's right.
Huh. Nice. Yeah, the website's still up. 122 stories.
Yep.
You really got lost on this website.
I'm assuming there was an episode of The Prompt where you spoke about that Jobs movie, but I can't find it. I'm looking through the list now and I can't find it.
It could have been the 512 podcast before The Prompt.
No, because the movie came out in August of 2013, and we spoke about the first trailer. I found that episode. But there was an episode where you went and watched it and told us what you thought about it.
Maybe we did it on some other show.
Maybe. That seems weird, though.
But yeah, I found the lack of Johnny Ive. Even, like, I thought maybe, like, in the background, like, he'll be, like, running his hand over the machine and we'll see him. But, like, just, he's a ghost. He's not there at all. And I wonder, like, maybe they couldn't get rights to him somehow. So they could, I mean, I don't know how that works. But he's just noticeably absent at the end of the movie to me. Kind of strange.
I think they might have just not included him. I think in buying the book, like the book is like a retelling of history. So like I don't think you need rights in that way, right? Like it's history. and you're acting out something that happened in history. They bought the rights to the book itself. I don't know if they need, because you're not buying a likeness, right? Because it's not him.
Yeah.
It's not his face. So I don't know.
Hertzfeld, by the way, said that the Steve Jobs, this movie, the Steve Jobs, was inaccurate in many ways.
Well, yeah, of course it was. But like that, it's because it's like a fictionalized mm-hmm. version of the truth, right? Like, but that's fine. I think it's fine. Yep. I was thinking that was going to like undermine the movie for me, but it didn't, because I could appreciate what they were trying to do. Right, like mm-hmm. there was enough stuff that I knew was fact in this movie. I knew it didn't all happen. No, it didn't all happen in the order that it happened. But that didn't really matter to me as such, because it was all stuff that I know occurred. Mm-hmm. So it didn't bother to me that it was in the wrong order.
Andy Hertzfeld, also on Twitter, 2,000 followers.
No, that can't be his real account.
Weirdly enough, he sent a total of 5 or 6 tweets. In 2018, a single tweet, actually 3 tweets this year, but then before 2018, his last tweet was from 2011.
He worked for Google for a while, and maybe he went silent.
Seven-year gap, and his bio says he's a retired hacker. So
is that really him?
Christina Warren follows him, Rich Siegel.
That's really him. It's really him, folklore.org. You can create an account on folklore.org. I wonder what the account is for. Maybe to leave comments.
Probably.
I kind of want to sign up right now.
You'll need a folklore account to add new stories and comments and rate existing stories.
No, I don't want to leave a story. I don't want to leave a comment.
Well,
anyway, I think it was a... I rented the movie, so I didn't buy the movie.
I own it now.
I rented it.
Okay. I didn't want to spend $15. I would watch it again. I think I remember watching the final 20 minutes in Italian on TV like last year. Okay. So I'm glad that I watched the movie. Look, I don't hate Fassbender. I just want to reiterate, like, there's some people that, and maybe I sort of brought this on myself.
You 100% brought this on yourself. I don't know why you are surprised that people think this about you.
Some people think that. I think it's debatable.
I quite literally today described to Adina the fact that you hate Michael Fassbender, and it's become a long-running joke on the show, and it frustrates me because I don't know why it happened, and I feel bad for him, in case he listens.
It happened because you... It's really, when you think about it, you guys' fault.
Yeah.
Because you made me look like I was an ignorant buffoon when I didn't know Michael Fassbender. And so that created
the way it went? Is that the way it went? I'm not sure if that's the way it went.
That created my hatred for this person.
Right.
Although I gotta say, he's a decent actor. He clearly puts a lot of passion in his job. He really should consider having a more peculiar facial appearance, but otherwise he does his job quite well.
I don't know how he's gonna do that. You should really aim to have a more peculiar face. If you just work at that, you'll be the perfect.
Put your mind
actor.
To it, you can accomplish Maybe anything.
Face tattoos, nose job. You know, there's plenty of options.
Right.
I'm just saying. But aside from that, I would rate this movie 7 out of 10. It's a decent movie. It's a good movie, flawed in the context of, by the third time the whole thing happens with the keynote and the family before the keynote and the drama before the keynote, it's sort of, you're like, a third time, really? But it's a really good script. I think it's a really good screenplay. It's shot very well, and I love the transitions. Even if it was somehow inaccurate, I think it was a good movie that I would watch again. I wouldn't say it's the definitive Steve Jobs movie. Maybe no movie's ever going to be the definitive movie on Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well, this is probably the closest that there will ever be, because it's based on, if somebody else can buy those rights and do something with them, this will be the closest, I would expect.
But I didn't hate it. Is all I'm trying to say. It wasn't as horrible as I feared.
Yeah. I think all in all, it's definitely not a thumbs down for me. It's not a wholehearted embrace, but I think you're right, Mike. This is the best we're going to get, at least for the time being. And out of the Jobs movies, it's just the best movie, right? Like, the one from a couple years ago isn't necessarily a good movie. Pirates of Silicon Valley was made for TV. Like, this is actually like a pretty decent movie just to sit down and watch.
Yeah, this is probably the best movie.
Yeah.
Right. Like, as a movie, it was probably the best one there'll be. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying.
You think they're ever going to do a Tim Cook movie?
No. I don't think they're ever going to do a Tim Cook movie. I just can't imagine him ever having the cult of personality that Jobs did.
Yeah.
I think out of anybody at Apple, kind of in the current era, that would end up being the central role in a movie, it would be Ive. But past that, and even that is sort of a stretch for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's the closest, but still doesn't seem possible. I mean, like, look, there isn't a Bill Gates movie, right?
Right.
Like, Jobs was a one-time deal.
The best Bill Gates movie is also Pirates of Silicon Valley.
What we're saying is basically just go watch Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Should have watched that movie again, man. Why did we watch this one? Anyway.
We did it.
We did it. It's done. We watched it.
Survived. We're still friends.
Mm-hmm. Good work. Good work, us.
I'll tell you what, it's got good biceps. He's really in shape.
That is true.
Fassbender. So, thumbs up for
his... Because he's a Hollywood actor, so...
Exercise team.
He's otherwise a superhero.
If we could all be as ripped as 1984 Steve Jobs, we'd be set. Well, I think that...
I would stick my feet in the toilet if I could be that ripped. If that's what I have to do, then I'll do it.
Just go for it. Well, I think that does it. Thank you, members of Connected and other Relay FM shows. If you're not a member and you're listening to this, we still love you, but you should probably become a member.
What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you, you thief?
Mike's taking a harsher stance than I am.
Just call people.
But go to relay.fm/membership and pick a show, any show that doesn't have Casey on it, and join up. All right, guys. Until next time, say goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Cheerio.
Adios.